Stay tuned for Talk Back with Happy Felton. Is a zebra white with black stripes or black with white stripes? In answering that, you can shift your sights so that the zebra is either. So it is with world affairs, too. What you have always thought of as being a political problem with economic aspects, viewed from another point, becomes an economic problem with political aspects. This is the reason it's so very important these days to listen to news analysts who know all angles of world affairs. Henry J. Taylor, ABC's distinguished commentator, is such a person. Listen to Henry J. Taylor tonight when he will bring you his commentary on the news in his program Your Land and Mine over ABC.
Want to learn all about the Army?
Well, the privates do what they're told. The corporals tell them what to do. The sergeants run the whole army. The lieutenants work for the sergeants. The captains are bucking for major. And the colonels? Well, the colonels just sit around all day giving orders like this.
Now combine the beaten egg. Better beat that egg first. Add to the flour mixture and stir until it is smooth.
No kidding. That's what a colonel has to say in answer to a letter today on...
Talk Back, transcribed by the American Broadcasting Company and starring...
Hi there, this is Happy Felton.
And the other star of the show is...
You, my friends, because I'm your mailman. Just send me letters that you write, addressed to anyone about any subject. I'll deliver them for you and try to get an answer recorded by the person you write to. Now, the address for your letters is Post Office Box 40, Grand Central Station, New York City. So see if you get an idea today and drop me a line. Or drop a colonel a line, just the way Mrs. J. Miller of Elmont, New York did. Let me read you her whole letter. It's addressed to someone who knows about Army Chow. Well, here's the way it starts. While my husband was stationed at Fort Sam, Houston, Texas, he was served something they call corn fritters. They are nothing like anything I ever made or anything that comes out of a cookbook. They are shaped into round balls and deep fried. I've heard nothing but corn fritters and how the Army cooks can make them since he is in New York. Please try to help me find the recipe for them so that I may have some peace. Yours truly, Mrs. J. Miller. That's what's carved over Grant's tomb, Mrs. Miller. Let us have peace. Now, to get someone who knows about Army Chow and live to tell the tale, that is, we went to Colonel George W. Wego. He's right up there in the Quartermaster's Corps. And all kidding aside, Colonel Wego is a combat man, too, in the tanks, which takes plenty of stuff. He's no desk pilot, but since the end of World War II, he's become a specialist in chow. He's got your corn fritter recipe for you, Mrs. Miller, so talk back, Colonel Wego.
Mrs. Miller, I wish you'd grab a pencil and paper, please, and I'll give you the recipe that I obtained from our Army cookbook. Now, I'll give you these ingredients, which we reduced from quantities of 100 men... down to a family styles. Here they are. It is corn fritters using cream style corn. The ingredients are flour, 1/4 pound, sugar, 1/2 teaspoon, baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon, salt, 1/2 teaspoon, eggs, just one. Shortening, melted, 3/4 spoon. Corn, cream style, 1 can, small. And, of course, some fat for deep fat frying. Now, how you will prepare this, you'll sift the flour, sugar, baking powder, and salt together. That's the first 4 items. Now, combine the beaten egg. Better beat that egg first. Beaten egg, shortening, corn. Add to the flour mixture and stir until it is smooth. Now drop by spoonfuls into deep fat, hot deep fat, 375 degrees, and fry about 6 or 7 minutes, turning the fritters frequently to cook them evenly. Drain on absorbent paper or rack and then serve while they're hot. Now understand, we are not competing with a housewife. She is tops and will always be tops. We're merely trying to do our best to feed little Johnny as you feed him. We can never hope to do it, but we're going to keep trying.
Well, from the looks of some of the Johnnies, Colonel Wego, you're doing a pretty good job, all right. And if any of you want that recipe, drop me a line. I'll send you a copy. Thanks for your letter, Mrs. Miller. We're sending you a handsome strand of Laguna simulated pearls, and they come in a gold kid carrying case. I think you'll find they look pretty swell. Mrs. S. L. Thornton of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, writes us a letter that she addresses simply to someone as interested as I am. She says, when a housewife is interviewed on the radio, 9 times out of 10, she will say, I'm just a housewife, when asked her occupation. When I hear those words, just a housewife, I do a slow burn and wish I could give the lady a nice little talk. I prefer the word homemaker to housewife. Maybe some of them are just housewives, but if they have a family to care for and do it to the best of their ability, I would consider them a homemaker. Believe me, it's just the biggest job in all the world trying to fill a combination of a dozen different jobs to be a good mother and homemaker. I'd like to hear another opinion on this subject. Sincerely, Mrs. S. L. Thornton. Well, Mrs. Thornton, there are lots of women as interested as you are, but a couple of years back I read a book called Modern Woman, The Lost Sex. And one of the writers of that book, Maranea Farnham, who happens to be a practicing psychiatrist, seemed to be one of the most interested people I'd ever heard about. So, talk back, Dr. Farnham.
I think, Mrs. Thornton, you have a very legitimate grievance. Once upon a time, of course, there was no such thing as just a housewife. Everybody was a housewife. Every woman thought of it as her natural outlet in life, and there was no deprecation of it whatever. When men and women were an agrarian society and were earning their livings together on the land, the man working out of doors, the woman managing the household and the things near to it, then, of course, there was no possible deprecation because the house was an economic unit which produced everything needed for the family, and between the men and the women did it. But along came the Industrial Revolution and set in motion the things which have changed our home to make it nearly unrecognizable, and have taken from it so very many of its old functions that at one time the home began to look very uninteresting and dull to women. They began to feel as if they had been deprived of their rights to a position in the world, and they cast about for some kind of solution. The solution they found, I think, was a wrong one. But you can always believe that hindsight is better than foresight, and it was a natural solution. For women looked around them and saw that men seemed to have a hold of everything that offered position and status and prestige, and they decided they'd go and get it too. Getting something that you envy is to go out and do exactly like the person you envy. So that's what women did. They began to think of leaving the home and finding careers for themselves and going out and rivaling men. As they did that, of course, it was quite natural that they should begin to deprecate the whole idea of staying in the home. And those women who did remain in the home began to be the objects of that sort of deprecation. And from this we have the woman apologizing for herself. For you must remember, Mrs. Thornton, that it was women who thought that up and who first began to answer that question by saying, me? I'm just a housewife. As if to say, me? I'm nobody. Now, of course, no woman would stand right up and defend that position, but she's doing it all the same, all the time, whenever she allows that to happen. Now, I think, it's my opinion, that we are already noticing a good deal of change in this thing. Women are beginning to see that they allowed themselves to be cheated when they went after this kind of solution to their problems. And I don't think, at least I hope, that it will not be very long before we will find that just a housewife is beginning to ooze its way out of our conversation, and women once again will feel about their function in life as if it were the honor that it really is.
There's some grist for your mill, Mrs. Thornton. And thanks for your answer, Dr. Farnham. We'll be looking forward to your new book, Adolescence. Well, we're sending off a handsome Wales stitchless leather wallet to Hattiesburg for Mrs. Thornton. Comes in a Wales jewel case. And you can use it as a weekend bag, Mrs. T. Well, I read you this next letter from Freeland, Michigan. There's a guy looking over my shoulder who's very interested in swindlers and gyps, because he's going to answer it. Here, I'll read you what Mrs. Anton Spindler
writes. I'm writing about something that my family and I have often,
and I do mean often, disagreed about. When a person receives in the mail a package from a firm that they did not order, are they obliged to pay for it or bother about it? I'm anxiously awaiting your answer, Mrs. Anton Spindler. Double check, Mrs. Spindler. That's happened to me, too. I still got a crummy tie hanging around someplace that arrived a little while back. Well, what are Mrs. Spindler and I going to do about it? Talk back, John Burke of the Better Business Bureau.
A great many people have raised the same question that bothers you, Mrs. Spindler. The question of whether receiving unordered merchandise imposes any obligation on the person who gets it. Better Business Bureaus throughout the United States have answered this question many thousands of times over the years. Most of the persons who have raised this question have been rather mad about it, too. For while the practice of sending out merchandise unordered is not illegal, it has always been the object of both widespread and intense criticism. Nothing seems to raise the hackles of John Q. Public faster than to get some merchandise he doesn't want, and along with it, a polite request that he either pay for the goods or return them. You will note, Mrs. Spindler, that the unordered package very seldom comes COD. No, that little device is definitely against the well-known and feared PL&R, the postal laws and regulations. Any high-pressure merchandiser attempting to make the United States mails his collection agency for unordered deliveries will very shortly find himself getting a visit from a postal inspector, which the merchandiser may find more than merely annoying. But what about the unordered merchandise that is dropped in your mailbox, along with a letter containing a request for payment? Well, this is a question of law, and I can't qualify as an expert. But the postal authorities and the legal authorities we have contacted are very definite and quite unanimous on the subject. Their answer is that recipients of unordered merchandise do not have to pay for it or return it.
Find out what people are saying to other people on Tuesday when it's time for Talk Back.
Thank you, Happy. Remember that address for your gripes, compliments, and complaints. It's Happy Felton, Post Office Box 40, Grand Central Station, New York City. Happy delivers your letter to the person you write to and then tries to get an answer for you, and you'll hear your letter and the answer on the show. Talk Back is produced by Gordon Auchincloss and transcribed in New York. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.